You're listening to 90.3 KFAI FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, online and archived at kfai.org.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
What's up? This is Toolman.
And this is Bear Witness.
And we are the Hallucination.
And you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, Best Of.
The Hallucination.
It's a good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, he need cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Kutagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local, national, Native news and events, and as you know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues. Hey, we got a jam-packed show. We have our friend Robert Lilligren coming on real soon, and we haven't talked to him in a couple weeks, and really excited to talk about what's going on in the community. I just want to give the community and our listeners a big shout out for listening to the show all these years. This has been, we're in 9 years of the show started when Standing Rock happened. And what happened was that there was very little, if not none, people talking about what was happening at Standing Rock. And that was the pipeline going right through a reservation in the Dakotas. And we felt it really was important to talk about that. And we've been blessed to be on the air ever since. We started out as an hour show and then a 2 hour show. And now the last few years we've been on 5 days a week. And I just want to say a big peeny geegy thank you to all our listeners out there. We really, really appreciate it. And we've had different guests on over the years. We've had people like Leonard Peltier, who's out now, and we say a big peeny geegy to President Biden for the clemency. We've had actors on. We've had people that we really respect, and we have musicians, artists, writers. We've had so many different people on over the years, and I just want to give a big shout out and a big peeny geegy to everybody. And again, listening to the show, I want to get our guest on here right away, Robert Lilligren. Welcome, Robert, CEO of Native American Community Development Institute here in the Minnesota in the Twin Cities. Welcome.
Yeah, bonjour, Robert. Thanks for having me.
It's so great to see you. It's been a couple weeks, and you are missed, and we really appreciate when you come on. And like I talk about a lot, what makes this show really great is the guests like you are like family now, and we talk about what's happening in the community, and you and I talk about what's happening nationally too, and also that we're getting up there in age and we have to look at the next leaders and how we support them. And I know you personally, but again, Native American Community Development Institute have really been in the forefront of rising and raising up individuals in the community.
That is very kind, Robert. I appreciate all your kind words and having this time together. I always appreciate it. But right at this point in my life anyway, it's how do we prepare to leave things better for the next generations? And you know, there's so many amazing emerging leaders here within the Twin Cities, and making sure that these folks are supported and given opportunity.
Yeah, definitely. And there's a lot still going on with the community, and we're still at the final stages here of Native American Month here in Minnesota. And I know there's been some tragedy, but there's also been some growth. There's been some conversations about how we support people better in our community when they ask for help. And I know Native American Community Development Institute is in the forefront of these discussions.
You know, we're part of the conversation going on here, right? But so folks who aren't from Minnesota, who may not know, in Minnesota, the month of May is American Indian Month. And this was an initiative by the American Indian Movement back in the 70s and started as a week, and it's grown into a month. And as far as I know, this is the only state in the country that has this May as American Indian Month. And over the last years, it's become a really big deal, and communities across the state hold different kinds of events and celebrations and things. And so the big kickoff was scheduled for May 1st, and we did have some tragedy, as you pointed out here, that there were some shootings in the community over the day before. May 1st. And so 5 people were shot dead within the community, and it just had such an impact. And there was a feeling of a lack of safety in the community, and that maybe celebrating wasn't the best thing for us to be doing on May 1st. And so we quickly, as a community, kind of re-envisioned this this kickoff event as a prayerful event. We had some spiritual and cultural carriers that did prayers. We had a drum, we had songs, and it was much more solemn an event than I think we had planned for. But again, the community just adapted, and a lot of allies came forward as well. And so then slowly we kind of ramped up a lot of the activities that were planned, and I was away for a couple of weeks, so I missed some of them, but I'm sure, Robert, you were at a lot of the open houses and celebrations. Yeah. And then tomorrow we'll kind of finish it out. We'll have a scheduled kickoff parade tomorrow. The Minneapolis American Indian Center will have their powwow and 50th anniversary celebration tomorrow as well.
It makes sense, though. But I don't like to think about that, Robert. We've always joked around, especially off air, about I always think 30 years ago was like the 1970s, but really it's the 1990s.
Right. 30 years ago. right Yep, it's a ways back there. So, you know, it's again the community kind of healing, coming together, but also recognizing we have things to celebrate, right? And so so let's celebrate and recognize that we still have a lot of progress to be made.
Well, and then also with celebrating too, I believe too, I talked to State Senator Mary Kunish today, and talk about all the good things too that have happened maybe in the last dozen years or 10 years that, you know, our relatives would have never thought of happening too. So there's a lot of celebrating too.
There is, and I'm glad you bring up Senator Kunish, one of our Native elected leaders who's just done groundbreaking work at our state legislature. And I think I've talked about this before, you know, being a growing elder and being where I am in my trajectory and kind of life and career, that recently I've had to stop and kind of recalibrate my perception and my perspective about where we are as a community, and to try to make sure that I'm not kind of trapped back in limiting sort of where we can go and what we can do, and to really embrace the progress that we've made and how it feels like, at least here, it's accelerating. Well, and I think on a national scale as well. And so so to not limit myself by kind of thinking, oh, well, this is as far as we can go, or, you know, I pushed as hard as I can or whatever. It's right. Really limitless. And I just feel really fortunate to be alive in this era, but be part of what's happening.
Well, you know, too, like having the show, and we're in our ninth season, believe it or not, and talking to young leaders coming up, like we had Ruth Anna Buffalo on, and we had somebody working from Minnesota Indian Women's Resource on, and it's just like young, enthusiastic, and there for the community, and seeing that and hearing that here on Native Roots Radio, I've been blessed to see that secondhand.
Right, and Ruth, I mean, I'm a big fan of Ruth Buffalo's and what she's brought out to our immediate ecosystem here, and that's a perfect example with her organization, Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center. But she comes in with sort of a fresh perspective. She's a former elected state representative in North Dakota, and she's not really limited, right? She is very innovative, out of the box, and it's just exciting to see what she's doing with the community.
Hey, we're here with Robert Lilgren, and we're going to be right back. This is Native Roots Radio.
To our elders who teach us of our creation and our past, so we may preserve Mother Earth for ancestors yet to come, we are the land.
This is dedicated to our relatives before us, thousands of years ago, and to the 150 million who were exterminated across the Western Hemisphere in the first 400 years' time.
Hi, this is Governor Walz. Thank you for listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. We are here with Robert Lilgren, CEO of Native American Community Development here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis. And, you know, we're kind of reminiscing, but also in a good way, how far, you know, I've always been told to look how far I've come as opposed to how far I have to go. And sometimes we have to do that to be really grateful. And I'm grateful for what I see. I know it's dark federally right now, but Robert, you know, we've gone through worse.
We have gone through worse. You know, we're the resilience people, right? And so this doesn't feel as unfamiliar to us, I think, as it does to some folks. And for me, I decided to, in this next new era, to find the joy, to live in gratitude, and as sort of a coping mechanism in some ways. But I like what you said, you know, we can, instead of, rather than looking at how far we have to go, look at how far we come in on the shoulders of the people that we stand on as well, right? The people who have made progress. And yeah, we're very fortunate.
So yeah. And we've been fortunate to know these people, you know. I know for me personally, I love history, and having walked with history, whether it was Clyde Belcourt or even having Leonard Peltier on the show, I mean, these things I just get jazzed about. And then I realize, well, geez, I'm old too. These guys were like the groundbreakers, and there's a lot of things that we wouldn't have if they didn't speak up.
Agree. And fight the fight, right? And I think of that generation as the founders, and that's in my mind. And you know, we've lost so many of them recently. They're our treasured ancestors, but they've left us quite a legacy. You're right. And so I feel like people like you, me, we're almost the exact same age, and sort of where we are in the generational trajectory, you know, we have an obligation to the founders to make sure that what we're passing on to the next generations is strong, intact, and just another thing that kind of indicates sort of how far we've come and then where we have to go. But I'm sure you followed this news as a St. Paul resident. But two important public spaces in St. Paul are going to be renamed to reflect the Dakota heritage here, and this is kind of a big deal.
Yeah,
and it's been an incredible level of activism from the community, responsiveness from the public sector jurisdictions that are involved, but a reserve that was formerly called Bruce Vento, he was a revered congressperson, mm-hmm. in the area, is now going to be renamed Wakan Teepee. you know, the holy dwelling or dwelling of the divine. And then the mounds, Mounds Park, which was burial mounds, right? That was kind of desecrated through the years. But that is going to be returned to a Dakota name, and I don't know how to say it. Do you?
No, Robert? Not yet. But we did talk about this, and it is such a big deal because I remember as being, we talk about being old, but I remember being, I think the Winter Carnival had a castle up there one year, and people were walking all over the mounds. Right. And I mean, that's 50 some years ago, but it's in my lifetime.
Well, for sure. I think that word is something like, and I'm not a Dakota speaker, but Imnizaska, something like that. I think it means like gravesite or graveyard. And the site is just across the Mississippi River from downtown St. Paul at the top of these white chalky cliffs where the name for Minnesota emerged. And above, just above Wakan Tipi, which is an eminently holy site. And it was treated very poorly for a long time. But I will note that the St. Paul City Council, who had authority to request and make this name change, voted unanimously to support both of these name changes. And it's easy to imagine not all that long ago that one to ban a unanimous decision. It might not even been a decision they made.
Exactly. So
progress. It's progress.
Yeah, exactly. And I know people talk about that area too, because I remember years ago we were fighting a splash pad there. And because our ancestors were buried there, and what was told to me is that there's only three remaining mounds, but there were hundreds of mounds up there.
Sure. Yeah. There's the three remaining, and if I'm not mistaken, and please don't quote me on this, I think only one of them is really intact. The others have been plundered, but they're still there. The mounds are there, and But I remember that splash pad plan.
Yes.
The community was kind of up in arms.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So
it just, and that wasn't that long ago, right? That was within maybe the last 10 years.
Definitely.
So just, again, just progress. As a community, Native people, in this case, Dakota people and allies, are really steering their own narrative. It's not taking what's handed to us. So I'm impressed. I'm very impressed.
And I was impressed about how the young ones came out on that when we were talking about the splash pad. I believe it was like, I was still teaching, so I believe it was like 8 years ago, maybe. You're right around there. And that was a learning curve for the community, but also the community that lives there, but also for us Natives too. And that's one of the great things about resisting, is you find these things out that you don't know, but maybe somebody else in our Native community knows.
Right. I think that's really an important observation, Robert, in that the sort of style of engagement and activism and advocacy has really grown in effectiveness. And, you know, as a community, we don't always agree. No big surprise there. We're not a homogenous group.
Right.
And I think we've become really aware over the last decade or so here how when we do come to a common understanding, a common objective, a common message, and we all go forward expressing that in unity, how powerful we are. And I still kind of surprised when I see how we're moving the dial here by doing that, by uniting as a community, doing the hard work to getting to a united position or united objective, but then really presenting to the outside world this unity. It's strong.
It is strong. And I believe, too, a lot of people have come back to the community and come back strong. And I know I'm one of them that I was gone for a long time. And I see that in other people, too, that are finding a place to be, and that's in the Native community. And that's super strong.
Agree. And then as a community, you know, here we're in the urban setting, right? There's 100 tribes represented within the population of the Twin Cities. You know, we have our 11 federally recognized tribes. And And so it's very diverse. And so we have to be deliberate as a community about how we come together, how we express our indigeneity, right? And how we can come together. And we have these fundamental kinds of conversations that we have here and that we need to have, you know, issues about, are we a shunning community or are we a reconciling community? You know, if we are one of those things, how do we express that? If we are a reconciling community, what are those mechanisms? How do we engage elders and others to help us do that? And it's not like if we were in our original tribes, it'd probably be a lot easier, right? We would know, everyone would know.
Yeah.
We are, but here we're always having to define it in real time.
Wow, I really have to think about that. That's awesome that you brought that up. One of the things I really enjoy about having conversations with you and other leaders is that our listening audience, because we're having a conversation here, and our listening audience really, really digs it and learns. And that's, we have so many allies out there that listen to this show and listen to AM 950 and civic media all across the country and appreciate this kind of talk because they don't know.
They don't. And I think you're right that there's at least I've experienced amongst allies, a stronger interest in understanding, in engaging, in learning how to be a good ally. Even, and, you know, just today at the office at NACD, Native American Community Development Institute, we have our All My Relations Arts Gallery. And of course, Powell Gong's coffee shop, which is a huge community gathering point. And so today, our congressperson, our congresswoman Ilhan Omar, was visiting with her staff and her husband. And then she gave us a day or two notice that she was going to be by. She had some meetings that she was taking in the coffee shop, and but she wanted a tour of the gallery and the new exhibit. But both she and her husband are just like thirsty for this knowledge. And her husband, especially, you know, they spent some time during COVID lockdown out in the Black Hills area. And that sparked his interest in Native culture. And he was just asking these probing questions. It was really exciting.
Let's talk a little bit more about that, because I had Ilhan on early in her career, and I'd like to talk a little bit about that. Hey, we're here with Robert Lilligren, Native American Community Development Institute, and we'll be right back. This is Native Roots Radio.
Support for KFEI comes from First Avenue, presenting Molly Brandt and Mojo Hand at the 7th Street Entry on Thursday, June 12th. Molly Brandt was named the 2023 CMA Americana Artist of the Year and recently released her album, American Saga. Mojo Hand's latest release, Gongare's, is their third studio album. Luke Cohen opens the show. Event information is available at first-avenue.com.
Hi, this is Representative Charisse Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the Native American Community Development Institute, or NACDI, in Minneapolis.
Hey, yes, it is. Hey, we have our friend Robert Lilligren here, Native American Community Development Institute, CEO. And we left off talking about Ilhan, and I remember when she first ran, she was on our show. And I'm not sure, Wendy, was that Pilots Progressive Party that we did?
I think it was, yes.
And we talked about Native issues, and she was not too hip to what was going on. But, man, is she learned a lot in a good way over the years.
I agree. And I've just been so impressed with her growth and development. I knew her back when I was in City Hall. She worked for a Minneapolis City Council member, and then entered politics with the state legislature, and now she represents us in D.C. for in Congress. And I just, one of the things I'm so impressed, she shows up in community, right?
Yes.
And, you know, today was very low key. She had some meetings at Powell Ground's coffee shop. She and her husband wanted to see the show in the gallery. And so there was this kind of a low key approach. We knew she was coming, but she'll just show up at community events, and often I'll go up to her, especially if I'm emceeing or something, and say, you know, would you like the mic for a minute? Do you want to talk to your constituents? And she says, no, I'm just here to be in community and with community. And I really respect that. There's not a lot of politicians that would refuse a microphone when offered.
Absolutely. And I remember seeing her many times in the past 4 or 5 years at our sunrise service, and just being low key too. I mean, I had to tell people that she was there because she was so low key that when they were acknowledging leaders.
That's a great example. And so we in Minnesota now, we in Minneapolis, we've had it for a while. We have Indigenous Peoples Day. Yes. And the second Monday of October. and we've had a sunrise ceremony consistently on one of our major lakes, Bidemakoska. Not so long ago, the name was changed to a Dakota name from an offensive slaveholder's name. And and it's just beautiful. It's a beautiful ceremony, and it grows so much every year. And I remember the first one was just a small circle. Now it's hundreds. Congresswoman Omar, a lot of elected show up, and it's not a political event, right?
Right.
It's a ceremony. So there aren't speeches or anything, but we do try to acknowledge our allies who are there. And you're right, she kind of just slips in. She's easy to miss. So I appreciate your making sure she's always recognized.
Yeah, it's a big deal. Hey, one of the things that's interesting is my real job as a Ho-Chunk legislator is ending. And one of our elders told me, well, now you can make these mud meetings. And I went, I plan on it. And, you know, and that's a good thing to bring up in a good way.
Cool. That would be great to see you there. So MUD is an acronym, MUID, Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors. And it's now, it must be almost 55 years old. It's a continually meeting leadership forum in the Twin Cities. And it's currently comprised of about 36 Native organizations and the executives of Native organizations. The tribal urban offices are represented as well. And, you know, in an urban setting like this, we don't have our sovereign governments, right? We're just a bunch of nonprofits. So we don't pretend to be anything but that. But amongst our orgs, we really engage with huge segments of the community. And so we've come together. It was formed 50 plus years ago by a group of, I think it was 7 executive directors, all women of Native orgs who just needed to support, right? They needed to support each other. So they've come together, and over the decades, it's grown into quite a force within the Twin Cities, and, you know, very influential elected officials, philanthropy, but government comes to MUD, Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors, when they're seeking guidance in trying to be more culturally inclusive. And so it'll be great to see you there more. It's a strong collective, right?
Yes.
And it's listened to.
Yes. Well, and then some of the things I know that you've been working on too is our unsheltered relatives in the MUD community. I know you personally and in a lot of the groups that you are involved with, not only Native American Community Development Institute, but the Met Council, which is a very, very powerful organization in the seven county area, and 17 other groups that you're involved with. What kind of things we talk about our unsheltered relatives, and I know MUD really speaks highly on that.
Yeah, and so thanks for asking. And, you know, there are these incredible sort of pieces of community infrastructure that have come together to help support our relatives living without shelter, our relatives living within with substance use, especially opioids. And so through the Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors, since a huge homeless encampment appeared in on our American Indian Culture Corridor back in 2018, a subcommittee of Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors have been coming together to address short-term, mid-term, long-term solutions to our relatives living at the intersection lack of home, lack of housing, and substance use. And then all these related things, right? Like our latest conversation is about commercial sexual exploitation and trafficking, you know, very adjacent violence in the community can be adjacent as well. And this group, we had a meeting on Wednesday of the whole, it's a community sort of based meeting. There were over 60 people there from all levels of the community, people experiencing unsheltered homelessness, outreach people, organizational people, public sector agencies at the city, state, county levels, all come together in one room and start to address these needs. And it's very powerful. And one of the people who works at the state level on housing issues said to me just last night, she said, that is my favorite meeting of my on my calendar. And Robert, I got to tell you, a ton of people say that, non-Native people. And we're dealing with heavy stuff, right? It's not happy, happy, joy, joy stuff. But there's just something so positive and I guess hopeful about having all of these voices together, the non-Native allies really kind of step out. So the Native voices are leading the conversation. And it's really changing a system. And it's so rewarding to be part of that. And then sort of an offshoot of that through the Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors is that we now have what we call the multi-jurisdictional response to unsheltered homelessness, where the Native community is leading the state, the county, the regional government, the city government, executives, people who control resources, resource holders, right? And trying to build out a holistic system that will support individuals, will support our relatives to success. So it's not just about shelter, or it's not even just about chemical health or mental health or physical health. It's about what are people's dreams and how do they reach them. So it might be education, it might be mentoring, it might be economic development, it might be a job, right? So we're trying to build a system. And I gotta tell you, Robert, in all my years in the public policy realm, this is the most traction I felt and the most hope I felt that we can actually improve the system with Native voices leading.
That's awesome. And I think we all, and it's interesting you talked about our white allies too. I think we all are looking for a place of community, and that sounds really powerful and, you know, and opening to everybody because, you know, we talk about the medicine wheel, right?
And by numbers, we're a small community, right? And so to really get anything done, to do systems change, we need our allies. And so this group, this Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors subcommittee that I chair on the, on these issues, the allies went together and, you know, made a sort of a standard of conduct document about how to be a good ally. And it's just beautiful, right? And the first, I think it's the first article is Native Voices Lead. Yeah, so it's just, it's this kind of goofy little group. Our revered ancestor, Marlene Hagamo, our elder, Mike Gozy, really prompted this group to come together at All Nations Church here back during the era of the Wall of Forgotten Natives. It's been growing since then, and there's something special happening there, and it's just, it's exciting to be part of it.
Well, I can't wait. I got another month, and I'll be showing up to those meetings for sure.
Congratulations on your service to your nation.
Well, and I really appreciate you saying that. And you had a lot to do and support me when I ran. I just, you know, things weren't in the cards for the second run. We kind of got gerrymandered out of the Twin Cities, but I have nothing but good thoughts because there's so much, as you know, Robert, it took me a couple of years to figure out how this government ran.
Right. Yeah, just when you're figuring it out, right?
Yeah. But, you know, good things ahead and, you know, and a chance to be in the community. And I think not to take away what tribal governments do, because I know it's daunting and every day, but it seems to me like groups like you and American Indian Movement and all the groups that have been around, with less people making decisions, more things happen. And I've gotten to appreciate that more.
Yeah, that's an interesting observation. And, you know, a tribal government is responsible to their nation, right? And to their citizens.
Right.
And so it's a little different in the urban community. We're not in our sovereign territory here. And so it's understandable. The focus for the tribal government is on the tribes. In the urban centers, it's the urban community.
Absolutely. Well, Robert, I just want to say I'm glad you're back. And I hope to see you tomorrow at the parade. Very important for our community.
10 o'clock gathering at Little Earth for the folks who are in town.
Yeah. Do you want to say that again? I think I was talking over you.
Yeah. 10 a.m. gathering at Little Earth, Cedarfield Park, right outside Little Earth of United Tribes here in Minneapolis. And we'll step off at 10:30.
Well, again, Pina Gigi, thank you so much for coming on and all you do for the community and all you've done for the community over the years. We have to really get into your past, too, because it's unbelievable what the glass ceilings that you've broken over the years. So, again, thank you so much, Robert.
Thank you. Chimigwech.
We'll see you tomorrow. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio. Up next, Wendy. Hey, Wendy, with your sacred animal portion here.
I'm excited to talk about animals as usual.
Right on. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio. We'll be right back after this short break.
Stay with us.
Oh.
We are Alusa Nation.
Governor Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Clinic on Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis, honoring health and tradition.
I always like to bring up a little applause for those guys. Hey, Wendy, we were talking a little bit, and we'll talk a little bit before Bob Blake from Red Lake comes on about this whole COVID thing. I just want to say a quick thing about it. This is going to hurt poor people, and if you want to get your kids vaccinated, it's going to be what, $100 a shot? You have 4 kids. That's the first thing I thought when I heard this ridiculous thing, but from RFK Jr. and wish he'd change his name.
The problem is that the COVID virus is constantly mutating and changing. So it comes out with new variants, and, you know, sometimes you could read about what's happening elsewhere in the world and you want to make sure it doesn't come here. You know, we had specific people all over the country keeping diseases like Ebola, you know, out of the United States. Sure. And, you know, all those people are like gone now. They were fired. So, like, I think, you know, you're going to give it another 6 months to a year. We're really going to see the detrimental effects. Mm. And people are going to be getting sick. There's going to be more hospitalizations. You know, hopefully it's not going to be as bad as it was when, you know, COVID just, you know, came out and we just saw it here for the first time. And there were refrigerator trucks. I remember my sister, who's a school teacher in New York City in Elmhurst, that's where she taught. And she said up and down the street, there's like these refrigerated trucks, you know, to keep the bodies in, you know, the dead bodies from COVID. So hopefully we'll never get that bad. But just for instance, I mean, RFK Jr. is saying that healthy children and pregnant women don't need to get vaccinated. Now, to me, that's crazy. So first of all, let's just talk about a pregnant woman. Okay, a pregnant woman, she gets vaccinated. This is going to prevent her, if she does contract COVID, from getting a severe illness. She might still get the COVID vaccine because the vaccine is not going to stop the virus from entering your body, and you might still get COVID, but you're not going to get a severe reaction to the COVID. You know, you might have mild symptoms, and that's what you want. The pregnancy increases the risk of severe complications from COVID-19. So it'll, you know, hospitalizations, ICU admissions, ventilator use, and death. The vaccination greatly reduces the risk of the severe illness, even if infection occurs. So again, yes, you get vaccinated, you could still get COVID-19, but you're not going to die, right? You're going to be vaccinated. You know, the COVID-19 also during pregnancy is linked to premature birth, stillbirth, preeclampsia, which is like a high blood pressure, which could really be very, very dangerous and really scary. Low birth weight. So even that alone, pregnant women should be getting their COVID-19. By preventing infection or reducing severity, the vaccine helps lower the risk of these serious outcomes for both the pregnant person and the baby. The thing is, too, vaccinated pregnant people produce antibodies, right, that cross the placenta. And this helps the baby passively get immunity, right? Then the baby gets immunity to this COVID vaccine. And this is especially important in the first few months of life when babies are too young to be vaccinated. So you have this newborn baby. You're not vaccinated, right? Because RFK Jr. said you don't have to get vaccinated. So the baby doesn't have that wonderful passive immunity, which it should have gotten if the mom got vaccinated. So here's this poor little baby being born with no immune system whatsoever anyway. And if this baby gets COVID-19, it could be really, really scary.
Yeah, you know? Definitely.
I mean, this the data has shown, we've been through this enough. Extensive data from the U.S. and other countries show that the COVID-19 vaccines are safe in all trimesters.
Right.
There is no link between that's been found between the vaccine and an increased risk of miscarriage, birth defects, or infertility. That's false. Health agencies like the CDC, American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, and the WHO, the World Health Organization, all strongly recommend the COVID-19 during pregnancy. And we really need to believe science. You know, we really need to believe science and what's happening here. I saw something else I wanted to share here. And here's the other thing. You know what? You get vaccinated against COVID, it's not just for you. There are vulnerable people out there, elderly people, people who are immunocompromised, who have cancer, who might be on chemotherapy, who might be on immunotherapies for different, you know, things that are happening to them. They are so vulnerable. Their immune systems are very, very weak. So we're talking about getting vaccinated, yes, for yourself, to help yourself, but also for the greater good, for the community, for, you know, everybody who can be you know.
Yeah, it's insane.
It is insane. We're going to see it. We're going to see a lot of things. And I just hope that the news reports what is going on.
Yeah. Well, if they don't, we will. Mm-hmm. Hey, you know what, Wendy? We have our friend Bob Blake in the bullpen. I think we're going to add him on here. We got like three more minutes in this segment, but it's great to see you. Welcome, Bob Blake. Great to see you. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, how's it going, Robert? How's it going, Wendy? Haven't seen you forever.
Yeah, it's going great. It's so good to see you.
It's like the old days back at the studio, right?
Exactly. How's everything going? We've got a lot of solar news happening, everyone.
Well, that's very cool. What I'd like to do, too, we got 2 minutes left in here, and then we'd want to hand the rest of the show over to you, but I want to talk a little bit about where you came from and how did you get to this point. And it's always good to have a reminder, especially with new listeners, of who you are, Bob Blake. So we're going to kind of do, I don't know, you're kind of too young to remember this show, but this is your life at first. And then we can do Solar Bear with the solar news. Look at his hat, Wendy.
I love his hat. That's great. For those who are listening to us on the radio, you can't really see his hat, but it is a black hat with a neon green wolf.
Oh.
It looks like it's howling into the beautiful aurora of the green with lights.
With the basketball on it, it's a wolf's hat.
Oh, it's a wolf's hat. Okay, for the Timberwolves. Are they playing tonight?
Are they playing tonight?
Or is it tomorrow night?
They're playing tonight.
They are playing tonight.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, this is it. This is do or die. They have to win tonight or else they're out.
They have to win tonight. I know. Okay. But you know, I was like, you know, showing this too because I was like the Howling for Wolves. You know?
Yes. And
so I really like that. Yeah, no, that's great, Robert. I mean, I am an open book. There is definitely so much happening with Native Sun and Solar Bear. And would love to let the listeners know how everything began, how it's going and what's happening and all the things that we're into. And we've just come so far, Robert, since, I mean, even on the radio show, right? Like when we started doing this, like who would ever thought that, it would come to this.
Yeah, I was hoping. No, I'm just kidding. But that was fun. Wendy and I were talking about that. The first segment is how we went to Iowa together and how we did the radio show there and the presidential forum, first Native American presidential forum. And then I also talked about your late great brother a little bit too, that I was friends with when I was really young.
And his name was Chima-Ingan, Big Wolf, and that was his native name. And so that was Bill. And you guys grew up together. And I just met a young lady who was explaining to me what she does, and we were talking about the Drum and Bugle Corps, and. She is a drum major. She's getting her doctorate from KU. And she was just telling me about how she, you know, orchestrates the band. And I said, I asked her, are you familiar with the Drum and Bugle Corps? And she said, absolutely. And so that was really cool. I started talking to her about you guys, Robert, and all the cool places you guys would visit and
compete. Yeah, definitely. Hey, we're here with Bob Blake and Wendy Pilot.
Programming is supported by the Bell Museum, where you can experience world-renowned wildlife dioramas, visit the Hands-On Touch and See Lab, and tour the cosmos in the Whitney and Elizabeth McMillan Planetarium. More information at bellmuseum.umn.edu.
Support for KFAI comes from The Cedar, presenting Rock to Restore Research, Friday, June 20th. Rock, punk, jazz, and R&B artist Tina Shaleski will join with dirt folk storytelling musician Freak in support of Unite to Fight Paralysis, a Minneapolis-based nonprofit working to restore budget cuts to spinal cord injury research. Minneapolis rockers Zoe Says Go will also be there to lend their talents and support. To Restore Research, Tina Shalesky, Freak, and Zoe Says Go at the Cedar Cultural Center is available at thecedar.org.
Oh, this is Dallas Goldtooth, and you're listening to the Native Roots Radio. Hoka, hecha, wecha.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
In this portion of the show, we'd like to bring awareness to our Minnesota wolf population. Say no to the hunt.
No.
Woo.
No.
No.
Hey, this is our sacred animal portion here. And Wendy, you've been doing this for 9 years on Native Roots Radio. I was a young person we when we started the show.
Yeah, we were both young.
Hey, I want to introduce my awesome and beautiful wife, Wendy. Wendy's been an animal advocate for many years, probably all your life, right? And
probably, yeah.
And we started with a two-minute segment on the show, and then it became a whole segment. And I'm glad it is, because I've learned so much, and I appreciate, and it's changed my thoughts on a lot of things too. So yeah. I appreciate you.
Thank you. Hey, everybody. My name is Hanaji Hihani. That means cares for them. And I was given that name by my Daga Curtis. Curtis goes by Mashke Hanajingo, which means walks on white clouds. I'm a humane policy volunteer for Humane World for Animals. So I'm a policy volunteer for Humane World for Animals. It still doesn't come off my tongue as as nicely as it should, because we used to be called the Humane Society of the United States, and now it's Humane World for Animals, which I like that name much better. I just have to get my tongue to say it nicely and smoothly. So
cool.
You're not going to believe this, Robert. I found on my Facebook feed, right?
Oh.
There's a... there was a post from Flights and Routes Every Day. It's mm-hmm. called Flights and Routes Every Day. It's a Facebook page, and they post stuff.
Uh-huh.
So this on this just the other day, I'm going to read this. So a Delta Airlines flight from Detroit to Los Angeles made an unexpected stop in Minneapolis, not for weather or fuel, but to save a sick dog's life.
Oh.
Yeah. Roughly an hour into the journey on May 26th, a pet traveling in the cabin became noticeably unwell. Flight attendants issued an onboard call for a veterinarian and found one.
Wow.
With input from the vet and concerns that continuing could be life-threatening, the captain diverted to Minneapolis-St. Paul Paramedics met the dog and owner on arrival. Delta later confirmed the pet had recovered.
Oh.
Yeah, this was Delta Flight 837, operated by Airbus 8321, carrying 181 passengers, and it was delayed by 2.5 hours, arriving in Los Angeles just after 1 o'clock. And this is a quote: "The safety of our customers and people come before everything else," Delta said.
Yeah.
It's not the first animal-related diversion this year. In April, a United flight rerouted after a dog defecated in the aisle.
Oh.
Yeah, that might be bad.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd want to be on that flight. That must have been really bad.
Depending on how big the dog was.
Exactly.
They
well,
have to be small.
You
be
never know. If it's a service dog, they could be any size. So, yeah. Earlier this month, pigeons twice grounded a Delta A220 in Minneapolis, but a dog saved mid-air? That's rare. And depending on who you ask, kind of heartwarming. So that was the post.
I got to say this, Wendy. When we fly, I'd say 90% of the time when we're going to New York, we take our dog.
Yeah, we do take Wanda with us. Yeah, we do. I mean, she's a little dog. She weighs less than 10 pounds. She's in a little soft little carrier. It fits right under the seat in front of us. But I have to call ahead, and I have to book her on my ticket. And then when we check in, we have to go to the, you know, we have to go to the service desk. We have to check her in. They have to give her a tag for her little carrier.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets like a little boarding pass. So she gets her little doggy boarding pass.
Well,
and
I think the last time that I took her back by myself, there was an empty chair, which I totally lucked out and put her next to me. And She was awesome.
Yeah. Depends on the flight attendants, too. I mean, I've had some of them where it's like, oh, yeah, it's okay to unzip it a little and let her head pop out. You know, and I've had others where like, no, that's against the rules. You have to keep her underneath the front, you know, the seat in front of you. You know, sometimes I'll pick her up and just put the whole carrier on my lap and then put my hand inside just to pet her.
Yeah.
It helps me as well.
Yeah. You know,
it does.
I forget about how good of a flyer you were. You've really come a long way, come to think of it, since we first 20 some years ago met each other.
Absolutely. Oh. Yeah, I was not a good flight person.
You are now.
Yeah. Well, I had a bad flight once, so, you know. Scary.
Oh, yeah.
So I have a couple of, you know, I haven't done this in a while, but I have I have two cartoons, you know, so I describe the little cartoons and I tell you about them and they're pretty funny.
I know it's funny that you do that. I think it's hilarious, but you do such a good job at it. So that's awesome.
Sometimes they're hard to describe. So here are two cartoon dogs. One is very, very old with no teeth, and one is very young. And they're like look like they're walking through the park. And the old dog has a cane, and he's walking with a cane. And they're talking to each other. So the old dog says, "I can't for the life of me remember where I buried them all." And the young dog said, "Relax. At your age, it's normal to experience some memory and bone loss."
Oh, jeez.
Ta-dum-dum.
Wait a minute. Yeah, I got to find that. There it is.
There we go. Exactly. I know.
I spilled my water looking for that button.
Okay. Well, now you have it handy. You have to make a little mark at it. Okay. So here's another one. And there's a dog in the living room and he's dancing. So he's break dancing in the living room, this dog. And it looks like he's dressed like John Travolta from
Saturday Night Fever.
Saturday Night Fever. Yeah, he's got bell bottoms on and a like sparkly shirt with a big collar and his chest is hanging out. So the dog's dancing in the living room and the his people are in the living room watching him. So there's a woman and a man. So the woman says, "I think we've told him to get down too many times."
Wait, is it? Where? There it is.
So they're kind of funny. I really like them. Yeah. So I've been talking about the hummingbirds. So the hummingbirds are around. You know, we have a lot of our garden in our front yard, which we took, you know, a few years back, we took away our grass. We have no grass. We just have all pollinator plants and flowers out there. So we have these plants. Excuse me. I have no idea what they're called. I'm like the worst gardener.
Wait a minute.
I can't. It's terrible. It's like, I don't know what they are. So anyway, I feel embarrassed about it. But anyway, they have like the little, like cup shaped, like, so they hunt for hummingbirds. But anyway, keep your, and I talk about this all the time, and I probably talked about this already, but keep your hummingbird friends happy and healthy. Hummingbird nectar can spoil, especially in hot weather. So remember to regularly empty and clean their feeders, even if it doesn't look like they've been touched. Yeah, so if it's less than 70 degrees out, you could do it once a week. So it's 70 degrees, once a week, clean the feeder. You want to just feed, you want to clean it with hot water and white vinegar. That's all you want to do. Don't use any type of soap because it leaves residue and it could poison the poor little hummingbirds.
Yeah, we get the hummingbirds in our backyard.
Yeah.
We're gonna have to do that again.
I know. So if it's like 71 to 75 every 6 days, 76 degrees to 80 degrees every 5 days, and so on and so forth, 81 degrees to 84 every 4 days. If it's really hot, every 85 degrees to every to 88 degrees every 3 days. And if it's really hotter than that, just do it every day. Because what happens is the sugar in the solution ferments, and then the little hummingbird sticks their tongue in it, and it gets stuck on their tongue, and then they can't retract the tongue back in their body.
Oh.
Yeah, it could really harm them and even kill them, really. So just if it's a commitment, you can't just put out a hummingbird feeder with some solution in it and just leave it there for the rest of the summer. And believe me, I'm guilty of it because I didn't know about this.
Well, we have a commitment. We're changing the water for the ducks out there every three times a day. So I don't see a problem with us doing it.
Exactly. Jeez. Yeah.
Hey, thanks to Robert Lilligren, the Native American Community Development Institute. And of course, you, Wendy, appreciate you. And all the information that you bring, I never knew that about hummingbirds until you told me.
Yeah.
Hey, if you're listening to this show, you are part of the resistance from Chief Plenty Coops, the ground in which we stand on. It's sacred ground. It's the blood of our ancestors. We need to resist, divest, join a group, run for office. We're still here. We are the seventh generation.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at KFAI.org, non-commercial, community-powered radio.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.
Gin and tonic, please.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.
Gin and tonic.